From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we welcome back singer Dawn Upshaw and listen to her new CD of songs by composer Vernon Duke. He's best known for April in Paris, Autumn in New York, I Can't Get Started, and Taking a Chance on Love. We'll also discuss the life of Vernon Duke with Upshaw and her producer Tommy Krasker, an expert on theater songs. And Maureen Corrigan reviews the new book by journalist Janet Malcolm. It's called The Crime of Sheila McGuff. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After establishing herself as an opera star and great performer of art song, Dawn Upshaw started performing American popular song. She's recorded an album of theater songs by Bernstein, Blitzstein, and Weill, and an album of songs by Rodgers and Hart. Now she has a new CD of songs by composer Vernon Duke, who's best known for April in Paris, Autumn in New York, I Can't Get Started, and Taking a Chance on Love. She does a couple of his well-known songs and several of his lesser-known ones. My guests are Dawn Upshaw and her producer, Tommy Krasker, an expert on music theater who has also produced several Broadway cast recordings and recordings of music theater restorations. Vernon Duke worked with such lyricists as Yip Harburg, Ira Gershwin, and Howard Dietz, but Duke wrote the words and music for his song Autumn in New York. Here's Dawn Upshaw's recording.
It's time to end my lonely holiday and bid the country a hasty farewell. So on this gray and melancholy day, I'll move to a Manhattan hotel. I'll dispose of my rose-colored chattels and prepare for my share of adventures and battles. Here on the 27th floor, looking down on the city I hate and adore. Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting?
Dawn Upshaw, Tommy Krasker, welcome to Fresh Air. Dawn Upshaw, your previous songbook record chose songs by one of the best-known songwriting teams, Rodgers and Hart. Why did you choose a lesser-known composer, Vernon Duke, for the new CD?
I actually didn't know anything about Vernon Duke, and it was Tommy Krasker who called one day and said, I think I've got an idea for our next project together. How about Vernon Duke? And I said, who? And he said, you know, well, actually, he's the guy who wrote the song April in Paris and Autumn in New York. And I said, oh, well, sure, I know those songs. And it turns out that I knew quite a few of them, but there were many more that I didn't know.
Now, you've passed on doing two of his best-known songs, I Can't Get Started and Taking a Chance on Love. Why did you decide to leave those out?
Want me to take that?
Sure.
One? Well, it was a song, I Can't Get Started is a song that perhaps was done enough and heard enough by the public that they had particular preferences even as to how they wanted to hear it done. And so we stayed away from that because I personally felt like maybe I couldn't bring it off. You know, I went through all these songs and I look for songs that I have a connection to and songs that I think I can bring something to personally. And that one, maybe even because of my own memories of hearing it sung by so many different singers in the past. Just I didn't think that I could maybe pull it off. So we stayed away from that one. And taking it a chance on Love, we actually recorded, and we may get back to it someday and find another place for the song. It just didn't work the way that we wanted to in this particular project.
Yeah, I mean, with a lot of these songs, the question we ask ourselves is, can we find a way in? And I'll tell you a little secret. I mean, Autumn in New York was on the fence for a while, and it was actually the great orchestrator Jonathan Tunick, who came aboard to orchestrate a couple of numbers on this recording, who suggested doing it. And, you know, we had heard so many recordings of that, and it was so etched in our minds as having a bit of a cabaret feel to it. We didn't know how to get back to the song itself. And we went over to Jonathan Tunick's apartment, and he suggested what I think was a very elegant, legitimate approach to it. And suddenly we found we were getting back to the core of the song, to the lyric, to the essence of it. And suddenly it was like discovering it anew. And we thought, wow, how could we have been on the fence about that? It just seems so obvious what a great song it is for Dawn. So sometimes we really need to find our way back to the core of these well-known songs before we want to try them.
It's a beautiful version of it, so I'm glad you did it. Vernon Duke thought of himself as having two separate musical personalities. He wrote classical music for orchestras and ballets under his birth name, Vladimir Dukhelsky, and he wrote songs for Broadway and Hollywood under the name Vernon Duke. And in his autobiography, he says, "There isn't a note of jazz in my serious music, and there are no symphonic overtones to my musical comedy output. I don't think that's anything to be proud of, and the wide gulf between the two styles has proven entirely too wide for most people's comfort, particularly for critics and fellow composers." Dawn Upshaw, I was wondering if you identify with his feeling, because you have two separate identities, too, in a way. You use the same name, but you're working in the opera world and the world of art song, and you're also working now in the world of songs from movies and musical theater. Do you identify with the sense of having two different identities and some people being uncomfortable with that?
I've certainly hoped that there's a big difference in my approach in performance style between the more classical music and the Broadway music that I've been singing. At the same time, though, I've really learned a lot by getting back to the more popular music about simplicity and straightforwardness and kind of no baloney. And I've realized that maybe even in my training in classical music, there's been this approach that it's such high art that it's unattainable and that it's anything but down to earth. And so I've been trying to bring that end of my work back into the real world. And so in that way, I'm trying to bring them together, in fact.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Vernon Duke in his autobiography pointed out that, you know, there were other composers who wrote both symphonic and pop music, you know, Gershwin and Bernstein and Kurt Weill, but Duke thought that whether they were writing the symphonic or the pop music, you still recognize them as themselves, whereas he felt that Dukhelsky was in no way resembling Duke. And I wonder if you agree with that Dukhelsky, the name he used to write his classical works, was really different from the Vernon Duke pop music. Because it seems to me that there's a strain of art song in the pop music, too.
Yeah, I certainly think, I don't know a lot of the Dukhelsky music, although we did include, of course, one art song, mm-hmm. one song from a song cycle on this recording, and I think it blends beautifully into the more popular songs. I certainly do know the Broadway songs, and they are incredibly complex. They are certainly much more complex, melodically daring, harmonically challenging and chromatic than the typical song of the day. So even if he felt, I guess, that those worlds were very dissimilar, he was certainly writing a much more serious strain of pop song than most of his fellow composers of that day.
Well, I want to play one of the pop songs that Vernon Duke wrote that sounds almost like an art song to me, and it's not officially an art song. It's a song called Water Under the Bridge, and it has a lyric by Yip Harburg, who also wrote the lyric for one of Vernon Duke's most famous songs, April in Paris. And Vernon Duke described this song, Water Under the Bridge, as a weird mood song. He says, Yip Harburg and I wrote for Everett Marshall to sing and Patricia Bowman to dance. This was probably the first of the out-of-this-world songs that I wrote. Not heavenly, just plain uncommercial. And Vernon Duke's publisher apparently refused to publish the song, saying, if you can't sing it, and Vernon Duke said he couldn't sing it, then how do you expect to sell copies of this? Dawn Upshur, is this a hard song to sing?
I don't find it vocally demanding. I think for its time, harmonically, it's way out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, when they say, if you can't sing it, how are we supposed to sell it? They're talking about a general public that wanted to sit down at their pianos at home and play along while they sang a simple melody. And it was a bit too difficult and complicated to do that. So I think for the general public, that's what he's talking about, that it won't sell.
I think the song is in some way extremely complex for 1932, when you recognize what publishers were looking for, of course, were, you know, jingly songs that would create instant sheet music sales. I think that's also one reason now music has become more complex. We're used to the complexities of the song, which is why I think that Vernon Duke is certainly due for a rediscovery now, is what once seemed unfamiliar or scary to a publisher in 1932 certainly doesn't seem that way to a vocalist today.
Good points. Well, let's hear Water Under the Bridge. Music by Vernon Duke, a lyric by Yip Harburg, and the singer is my guest, Dawn Upshur. That's Dawn Upshur from her new CD of Vernon Duke songs. My guests are Dawn Upshur and Tommy Krasker, who has produced all of Dawn Upshur's Broadway music CDs. It's really a beautiful song. Tommy Krasker, did you find that song?
Yeah, actually, it was Vernon Duke's autobiography, Passport to Paris, that led me to that song. We had Dawn and I put together a list of songs that interested us, and as we were in the final stages of putting together the recording, I decided I would take one more look at Duke's autobiography to see if he led me towards certain material. And of course, he talked about that number and how daring it was for the time and how his publishers wouldn't publish it. And I thought, I'd love to get my hands on that. Of course, it was hard. It wasn't published. The Yip Harburg Foundation actually had a very sketchy lead sheet of it, which I was able to get a copy of. And I could see from that that it was a song that interested me and might interest Dawn. I was very fortunate, however, because Duke had recorded it, and I was able to locate an old 78 of his arrangement of him playing the piano with a clarinetist and a vocalist from, I guess, 1934, and we heard it. We liked it. We knew we couldn't actually do better than that, and so we lifted that arrangement. So what you're actually hearing, which is rather unique, I think, is Vernon Duke's own arrangement of his song that he did in 1934, reinterpreted by Dawn Upshur and Eric Stern, our pianist and conductor.
My guests are singer Dawn Upshur and the producer of her music theater CDs, Tommy Krasker. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. ¶¶ My guests are singer Dawn Upshaw and her producer Tommy Krasker. Their new CD features Upshaw performing songs by Vernon Duke. Vernon Duke wrote classical music when he lived in Russia, and he lived there till he was in his late teens. He came to America in 1921 and didn't start writing pop songs for musicals until several years after that. And I believe he was encouraged by George Gershwin. Tommy Krasker, do you know how he met Gershwin and what Gershwin did to help Vernon Duke?
Well, as I understand the story, he was in the United States basically earning a living any way he could as a pianist. I think he was playing for magic acts and things. And George Gershwin heard him, and he befriended him. Duke, whose name was Vladimir Dukelsky, played him some things that he had written, and George Gershwin basically said, look, you have a great talent, but to be quite honest with you, I've discovered that there's no money in that particular field. If you want to earn a living, you need to start writing popular tunes. He gave him the name, actually, Vernon Duke, at that point, and said, when you get around to writing popular things, that's the name you should use. Dukelsky then went back to Europe, wrote some ballets, wrote some symphonies, but I think eventually decided George Gershwin was right. He moved back to America, I think, around 1929. George set him up with a budding lyricist friend of his brother Ira's named Yip Harburg, and they became a songwriting team. And suddenly there was a new Broadway composer named Vernon Duke writing a series of reviews for Broadway.
How well did he fit in on Broadway and in Hollywood?
I think it took a while, certainly, for the critics to adjust to him. He was certainly writing a much more complex kind of art song than they were used to. And I think it's rather telling, actually, that his first song hit was April in Paris, just a couple of years after he arrived in the States. And the song itself, of course, is a major achievement, and everybody knows it now, but I think we've sort of forgotten what an unusual song it is. Very chromatic, melodically, with some soaring skips in the melody that make it rather challenging, I think, and difficult to sing. The critics pretty much didn't notice that song when it premiered, and I think 1932, they simply didn't know what to make of it. And I would say it wasn't really until the mid-30s that the critics understood that, yes, he was complex, but he was also brilliant.
I'm glad you mentioned April in Paris. It's one of Vernon Duke's best-known songs, and I think his first pop music success. Yes. Dawn Upshaw, do you think of it as a challenging song?
No, not really. I think, as Tommy said, you know, people's ears and the musical language changes over the years, and we become much more accustomed to hearing certain kinds of surprises harmonically, or leaps that were not so common in one time become more understandable, or we're conditioned to hearing them and understanding them after years. I think that there actually were a couple moments in some other songs that I didn't know as well. Of course, I've grown up hearing April in Paris, but there were some other places and other songs that I did have to, you know, get down at the piano and make sure I was singing the right notes and play along with myself. So it did happen occasionally, and then I would get it into my ear.
You've said that you didn't include the song I Can't Get Started because so many people had done it before and you didn't know what new you could bring to it. Now, April in Paris has been a jazz standard for years, and so many people have recorded it. Tell me what you wanted to bring to your version of April in Paris.
I really enjoyed singing it, first of all. I find it gratifying to sing. In terms of the message, I thought, well, if I really get down to exactly what this is about, this sort of feeling, a description of what's going on, is something that I have felt before. And I think that I, for whatever reasons, related better to it at this time in my life than I did I Can't Get Started. And it could be that I would change my mind, you know, in 5 years about that. But at the time that we were getting together and going through the pieces together and talking to arrangers about where can we take this song, how might we shape it? Do we want to start with the chorus or with the verse? What kind of mood do we want to set? Everything seemed to make sense to include April in Paris.
Singer Dawn Upshaw and producer Tommy Krasker will be back in the second half of the show. From Upshaw's new CD of songs by Vernon Duke, here's April in Paris. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom, holiday tables under the trees. April in Paris, this is a feeling no one can ever
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873, online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN, and by Little Brown & Company, publisher of Finding Hope in the Age of Melancholy by David Aubrey, available in bookstores. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more songs by Vernon Duke as we continue our conversation with singer Dawn Upshaw and producer Tommy Krasker. And Maureen Corrigan reviews Janet Malcolm's new book.
Though hope is low, I'm aglow when you smile at me. Life is simple as ABC. Not a thought in my head, not a care in the world. Skies are gray, I'm as gay as a Disney cow. Not a wrinkle upon my brow, not a cent in the rain, not a care in the world. I view the sea like that old queen of Russia, as Kate the Great used to state long ago. Chivoso, if I move in a groove with a giddy trot, I'm a trotting because I've got not a bean in my pot, not a care in the world.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with singer Dawn Upshaw. Her new CD features songs by composer Vernon Duke. Also with us is the producer of her music theater CDs, Tommy Krasker. He's an expert on music theater. One of the things I particularly like about this new CD is that you've managed to include, you know, a few familiar Vernon Duke songs, and you've managed to include a lot of really virtually unknown Vernon Duke songs that are quite beautiful. I think that's a kind of almost daring thing to do, in the sense that I think most of us expect pop music to be familiar. And there's a special pleasure that we all have as we listen to a familiar pop song sung, because we sing along with it in our minds. Hearing that melody take all those familiar twists and turns, you know, that's one of the things we all, I think, really like about pop music. So I think it's a kind of daring thing to do, to take unfamiliar songs and present them.
I mean, the truth about Vernon Duke's music is so much of it is unfamiliar, and I think we're really able to show with this CD, and one of the things I'm most proud of is we really do show that, I mean, songs don't necessarily die because they're bad. The truth of Vernon Duke,
yeah,
of course,
right.
is he was very successful in the 30s when he was writing reviews and could do these brilliant songs like April in Paris and Autumn in New York, and the shows were by and large successful, so the songs endured. In the 40s, Broadway took a different turn, and musical review turned into a musical play with the Rodgers and Hammerstein era. Vernon Duke really didn't seem to have a particular aptitude for that. The demands of the musical play, finding the right collaborators, finding a good theme, really putting the pieces together very carefully was something that eluded him. And one by one in the 40s and 50s, his shows just failed. I mean, a lot of them didn't even get to Broadway. They just closed out of town. And with the failure of these shows went some wonderful songs that were never published, were never heard. I mean, Lord knows there weren't a lot of sheet music sales. There weren't dance bands playing them. There obviously wasn't a movie version of a show that was going to close out of town. So what happened was, as these shows died, all of these wonderful songs just got buried.
Well, I'd like to feature a song that really did get buried. And Tommy Kresker, this is a song that you basically had to track down and restore. The song is called Roundabout. Tell us what existed of this song before you track down the rest of it.
Sure. Roundabout is a song that Vernon Duke and Ogden Nash wrote for a 1946 musical called Sweet By and By. And Sweet By and By was another one of those Vernon Duke shows that, I don't know, I think he called it a real stinker in his autobiography or something like that. It was closed out of town. I mean, I think it closed in Philadelphia. And so, of course, the score never really got heard. They loved the song, and I think Roundabout is actually Vernon Duke's own favorite of all his songs. They loved the song so much, they kept trying to put it in later works, and I think it later found a place in a show called The Littlest Review. But it was really like an art song, very long, 5 or 6 minute song. Well, of course, they did publish it, but they published it in a very simplified version with just a verse and a refrain. And it was when I was working in the mid-80s, in Secaucus, New Jersey, actually, at the Warner Brothers Music Warehouse, where a huge discovery of musical theater manuscripts had been found, that I chanced upon a lot of the score to Sweet By and By and found this manuscript version of the interlude, a two-minute interlude of this song, just the music, no lyric. And I held on to it because I recognized the quality of it. And later, I was digging through some materials at the New York Public Library, and I found the lyric to this interlude. So, I mean, this was a song that actually took me a couple years of digging to put back together. And I think I'm fairly secure in saying that what we're presenting on this new CD is the full version of Roundabout as it really hasn't been heard since Sweet By and By played out of town in 1946.
And which is the part of the lyric that you found?
The lyric of the middle interlude.
You wake each morning alive and gay. You think today is another day.
Don Upshaw, did you like the song when you first saw it?
I loved the song. This was one of, and remains one of my favorites. It is one of the simplest tunes in a sense, but what he does musically actually is describe what he's got in the lyric by Ogden Nash. And that is that, the notes in the chorus, you go roundabout and roundabout and roundabout. You go so they're all kind of sliding around this one note. And no, it doesn't travel much distance. And that's sort of the whole point, that through life, even though we have different experiences and different loves, essentially we're reliving our mistakes every day. And perhaps nothing ever changes.
I will say one thing about the part of the song we found. It's so telling that middle interlude, of course, was not published because, as Dawn said, the rest of the song sits in a fairly limited range. This middle interlude on lines like, and that's the moment not to be astounded to find that you've been merry-go-rounded, is full of these wild melodic skips. And it really does take a certain kind of singer to pull that off and to make it seem natural.
Let's hear the song. This is Roundabout from Dawn Upshaw's new CD of songs by Vernon Duke.
Each morning alive and gay, you think today is another day. Your future seems a primrose path. You hum to your pillow and you sing in your bath. You Your stockings hug you along the seam. Your girdle fits like a sophomore stream. You roam the world like a romantic rover. You find today is just yesterday warmed over. You meet a man and you're on the crest. You think he's different from all the rest. You start to dream of a cozy flat with milk for the kids and cream for the cats. And that's the moment not to be astounded, to find that you've been merry-go-round. About the game, then it's swing around your partners as you go. But the more they change, the more they are the same. When the dancing is done, you are back where you started. Each tomorrow shines through your vacant heart. Then it's round about and round.
That's Dawn Upshaw from her new CD of songs by Vernon Duke. The lyric is by Ogden Nash. And my guests are Dawn Upshaw and Tommy Krasker, who produced this CD. Dawn Upshaw, it must be really interesting for you to take a song that hasn't been sung much before, that isn't familiar, and interpret it, because you don't have to worry about doing something different from what everybody else has done. You could just do it how you want to do it and not even think about other interpretations.
Yeah, that is a definite advantage. I think it also keeps me thinking and tries. I think it keeps me true, I hope, to the text when I'm not worried about how others have done it in the past.
Tommy Krasker, you say you first stumbled onto this song when you were working in the Warner Brothers warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing there? That must have been interesting.
There was a huge discovery of musical theater manuscripts sometime in the early 80s, I guess, which included Gershwin, Porter, Rodgers and Hart, along with Arlen Duke, Arthur Schwartz. And sometime in the mid-80s, they were cataloging, and I was pulled in to help catalog that material. As I said, some of the material that impressed me the most at the time, mostly because I didn't know it. I mean, the Gershwin was great and the Porter was great, but I knew a lot of those songs. I was so impressed by the Vernon Duke material. And as I think I mentioned to you, the one of the shows that was there in manuscript form, one of the lost shows was this Vernon Duke show, Sweet By and By. I happen to think it's one of his finest achievements, but again, totally forgotten. And from that, actually, for this recording, we pulled several numbers that haven't been heard in 50 years, including Roundabout, including a gorgeous ballad called Born Too Late, which was originally written for Sweet By and By, although it wasn't heard until about 10 years later, and a novelty piece called Seagull and the Eagle. Oh, I guess one more as well, Low and Lazy.
Oh, that's right.
It's an example of an incredible score that simply got buried when a show folded.
My guests are singer Dawn Upshaw and the producer of her music theater CDs, Tommy Krasker. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are singer Dawn Upshaw and her producer Tommy Krasker. Their new CD features Upshaw performing songs by Vernon Duke. Dawn Upshaw, earlier you were saying that your performances of pop music are encouraging you to strip away the baloney from certain classical approaches to performance. And I'm wondering if you could talk more about what the baloney is that you were exposed to that you're now trying to strip away?
I think a certain kind of training that is much too centered around sound and around creating a certain quality of sound that should, in some people's minds, remain consistent through a song. Just working from the angle of sound rather than working from the idea that this is a combination of text and music and how and trying to understand how the music expresses the text. And I think that that people can even get caught up in creating certain sensations in their bodies that also have nothing to do with the sentiment or the mood or the poem itself, that you can get so caught up in feeling a certain sensation and understanding your vocal mechanism that starts taking you away from imaginative interpretation.
What kind of physical sensation are you talking about? Can you describe a certain sound that gives you that sensation?
In a voice lesson, for instance, one might be working on feeling a certain lift and a certain space in the top of your head so that things are kind of buzzing. This especially happens if you're singing up in the upper range in more classical operatic repertoire. And you can also work on vibrato, making sure that there's no real change in color and in vibrato, and working towards a legato, a smooth, connected sound. And sometimes I just think you can lose track of what we're trying to express to begin with as singing actors. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I think perhaps that classically trained singers are trained to sing primarily European opera and art song and learn Italian vowels and French vowels and German vowels and are perhaps discouraged from certain sounds in American vernacular pronunciation. And I'm wondering now that you're singing more pop songs, whether your sense of how just language should be, how words should be pronounced has changed.
Definitely it's changed. And, of course, it makes me wonder for all the other languages that are not my first. you know, because I think that I have learned that you can really take things a much further distance and enjoy consonants much more than we're typically taught to. We're taught to sing on the vowels all the time. But there are many expressive consonants and consonants that you can actually sing on for quite a while. I have really enjoyed that investigation.
Has recording more pop songs changed the music that you listen to, if you have time to actually listen to records when you're at home?
I always listened really to a lot of different kinds of music. Certainly Joni Mitchell and Aretha Franklin, Steely Dan. I have been listening. I guess I've listened to more Frank Sinatra, actually, since I've been working on the popular music. And I've been turning on the radio to some popular stations certainly more often than I would have before.
I'd be interested in hearing you talk about Sinatra. What do you like about his singing?
I like the fact that I feel it's relaxed and spontaneous at the same time, and that there is a true personality coming through every minute. I don't feel like he's thinking about the sound he's producing. Again, we're getting back to the same sort of thing. It's interesting because I've had this conversation with people who do not agree with me about Frank Sinatra. I think that, of course, he has a huge following out there, but believe it or not, there are some people who don't get it. And I think the fact that it does sound so relaxed turns some people off. But for me, it seems like something completely natural, and I'm attracted to that.
I'm with you. Tommy Kresker, you're obviously very immersed in American popular song, and I'm wondering if you sing or play yourself.
I do play the piano, not a lot anymore, but certainly a lot of my tastes are influenced by what I used to play at the piano when I was growing up. I really don't get around to playing much anymore, except on those opportunities, actually, on recordings like this, where the first step of the process is my looking at all the material, picking a couple of dozen, and poor Dawn, I actually put them down on tape with me playing and singing them.
And then all of them.
She keeps them to use against me at some point. And somehow from those tapes, she's able to actually determine what's a good song and what's a bad song. That's actually one of the most fun times for me, though, is actually to sit down and play through a great deal of material and decide what might be appropriate for a recording.
It's one of the best times for me, too, because he always speaks to me on these tapes as well and tells me jokes. And
they're like long, extended letters. Hi, Dawn, I'm about to play 24 songs. Here's one I can't begin to sing, but you can, that kind of thing.
Do you know what your next project would be?
We were just beginning to talk about that on the train coming in today.
Yeah, I don't think we actually do. I think, like the Vernon Duke, something will strike us and just seem intuitively right. That was one of the loveliest things about the Vernon Duke is when we first thought of the idea, it seemed right. When then I sent the music to Dawn, I was so gratified when she then called me. I think she was in Europe somewhere doing something, and she said, yes, I like the material. I respond to it. It's a go. It's always nice when that happens, when we're both thinking the same thing, and we'll just have to see what the next thing we both click on is.
Well, thanks to both of you. Tommy Kresker, the producer of this new CD, and Dawn Upshaw. The new CD is called Dawn Upshaw Sings Vernon Duke. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
The love I long for, I've no right to demand. But I'd make much of the touch of a tender hand. The love I long for is a thing set apart. No knight in armor, but far more an understanding heart. Someone who's there to
that's Dawn Upshaw singing The Love I Long For from her CD of songs by Vernon Duke. Coming up, Maureen Corrigan reviews a new book by journalist Janet Malcolm. This is Fresh Air. Janet Malcolm has investigated the murky worlds of psychoanalysis, photography, journalism, and biography in her books. Her latest, The Crime of Sheila McGuff, delves into the legal realm. Book critic Maureen Corrigan says Malcolm, even at half wattage, is illuminating.
A newspaper editor friend of mine once came up with what I thought was a fascinating idea for a feature article. She suggested calling up famous writers and asking them, who is the writer, living or dead, who you would most like to write the story of your life? When I heard that question, I immediately blurted out, Janet Malcolm. Ooh, scary, my friend said. Choose somebody like Chekhov instead. He'd put a better spin on things. It's true. Malcolm is merciless. Her subjects, like the Freud apostate Jeffrey Mason and the ghost of Sylvia Plath, have paid a high price for her scrutiny. As a portrait painter in words, Malcolm is a graduate of the Dorian Gray School of rendering her sitters, warts and all. But oh, the clarity she brings to the chaos of daily life. For Malcolm, as for Freud, the most random gestures and banal house furnishings figure as telltale clues to the unconscious. If she were my biographer, I might not want to open the book, but I'd never doubt that it would be worth reading. Just about anything she writes is worth reading, even her latest book, which is hard to like because it takes on the qualities of its main character. The Crime of Sheila McGuff is about a woman who was sent to jail, Malcolm claims, merely for the crime of being irritating. Here's the story. In 1996, Malcolm received a letter from McGuff, who'd just been released from prison after serving 2.5 years on 14 counts of felony. McGuff had been a defense attorney practicing in Virginia. She was in her 40s, single, a nice Catholic girl who lived at home with her aged parents. Her downfall came in the shape of a charming con man client named Bob Bales, who tried to scam people by selling them titles to unregulated insurance companies that didn't exist. McGuff was found guilty of being Bales' accomplice, specifically by letting him use her attorney's trust account as a drop for the investor's money. Malcolm, though, sees McGuff as a victim of her own naivete and loyalty to her unworthy client. She buys McGuff's story that because she kept appealing Bales' convictions, she annoyed federal judges and prosecutors, and those prosecutors eventually framed her with the felony charges just to shut her up. In the closing pages of her book, Malcolm says that McGuff has settled into my imagination as an exquisite heroine whose idealism about the law is inspiring. Malcolm also admits that she never dreaded talking to a subject more than she did McGuff. The problem is McGuff's manner of speaking, tedious, literal, and filled with the most irrelevant details. Malcolm's own account here is sometimes bogged down by all the rehashing she does of legal proceedings. Unless you agree with her premise that the transcripts of trials at law are exciting to read, you'll probably feel, as I did, that parts of this book are as drab as the suits those lawyers wear to court on the practice. Malcolm even frustrates our expectations that McGuff was seduced by Bales, and that's why she remained so steadfast to him. No romance plot here. Instead, we get something much more compelling. The tale of terror that Malcolm has been developing throughout all of her books. Malcolm's grand subject is the elusiveness of truth and the wobbliness of language as a vehicle for truth. Scrutinizing all those dull trial transcripts, she concludes that trials are won by attorneys whose stories fit and lost by those whose stories are like the shapeless housecoat that truth, in her disdain for appearances, has chosen as her uniform. Because McGuff's rhetorical style is so distended by the bounty of truth, she can't make herself be understood. Implicitly here, Malcolm invites readers to think about all those people, much less educated than McGuff, who can't mold their stories into the familiar shapes that people in power, doctors, cops, teachers, expect to hear. Sure, Janet Malcolm is a brilliant and controversial journalist, but I also think she ranks right up there with our greatest contemporary horror writers.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The Crime of Sheila McGuff by Janet Malcolm. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, and Kathy Wolf, with Alan Tu, Monique Nazareth, and Anne-Marie Baldonado. Research assistance from Sam Adams. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Tariq Rose.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from the National Endowment for the Humanities, expanding American understanding of human experience and culture, and Little Brown and Company, publisher of Tom Jones's collection of short stories, Sonny Liston Was a Friend of Mine, available in bookstores. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next archive edition of Fresh Air, comic Julia Sweeney talks about living with cancer. Her solo show, God Said Ha, has been adapted into a new film. Next week, we'll feature a series on the science of cancer and new cancer research. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.